Today's topic might be the topic of first impressions. And the reason I say might be is because I'm not sure if this topic can actually fill the entire duration of this lecture. But I thought that it would be important for me to try to speak about it because it's something that has been on my mind over the last 2 days. And I see, I have seen, that the feeling or the thought patterns I have in my mind directly preceding a broadcast on Saturday somehow or another parallels important thought patterns that you out there in the audience have had. Now, I know not everybody has the same kind of thought patterns. I know that not everything I would say relates to everything that you are concerned about. But I try to address these impressions that come to me. I try to address issues, concepts, questions, concerns, feelings. It's almost as if when you think about our broadcasting experience, you send to me vibrations, and I feel these vibrations in my far energy field. I have my near energy field, and I have my far energy field. My far energy field is a field that I am not always consciously concerned about. Obviously, there's an awareness, and obviously, it affects me. But it's not something that I am continually interacting with on a moment-by-moment basis. I am mainly acting with my near energy field. My near energy field includes my perception of life. It includes the way my senses operate. I see something, I feel something, all of this related to my experience, the experience that I, the living energy, have in this realm of physicality, that I, the living energy, am expressing through this physical form. In this realm of physicality. And because of that, my near energy, that which is directly relevant to this moment in relation to the physical realm, is my main concern most of the time. And that's obvious because when we do things, our consciousness needs to be connected with the arena within which we do things. Now, there are also aspects, there are also perceptions that are of the far nature, that are somewhat distant from us. Perceptions which relate to energies related to us, but not obvious. Like, for example, obviously, right now I have all this technology around me that you can't see, which is used to broadcast. I have my trusty translator in my right ear. I have a task to perform, to speak. So this is all within my near energy field. But in this particular experience, that which is at a distance is equally important, because I am speaking to you. I'm not talking to a camera. The camera is very uninteresting. It's a really uninteresting object in and of itself. Now that I'm looking at it and talking to it, I feel like some kind of madman, because my consciousness has now connected to the camera, and I feel like I'm a total madman. So we have to give that up for a second and stop being perceived, not stop the arena of perception simply being the near energy field, and move back to the interactive experience between this particular near energy and the far energy, the distance energy of all of you. I feel it geometrically. Probably that's the wrong word. I see this right now as like a point, and then this like arena, like this semicircular arena of energy, as all of the listeners are lined up in an audience of energy, listening, accepting. And because I see like that, I also feel when someone is not accepting. Because in that spot, there is a resistance. In that spot, there's somebody who doesn't feel comfortable with this exchange, who would not even want to accept that such an exchange is taking place. And there are others who say, of course, it's what we do on Saturday. It's what we do when I'm sitting physically in front of the speaker like this. It's what we do. It's our particular exchange of mystic energy. Now, mystic is one of those words, but what it really means is that even though we are physically separated by many, many thousands of miles, we are energetically not separated at all. We are in the same energetic arena. We directly perceive each other. We feel it. And we have been feeling it. It kind of like increases up to the point of the Saturday broadcast. It's something that's continuing, because there's always this like exchange of energy, as if the concepts, as if the discussion topics linger. They linger. Not only that, but there's these recordings of it. I actually saw a statistic about how many people download these lectures. I was shocked. I mean, there's a lot of people listening. So it's like this exchange. This exchange lingers, because also there are others who experience it in a new way afterwards, making new connections, new contacts, and continually the energy lingers. And for those who are regular attenders of this experience, that which is important in their minds tends to flow towards me, towards my far energy field, which I am usually not directly related to unless I'm doing something like this. So right now I'm lecturing, so I'm very much connected to this. Before I lecture, I need to have a topic. I mean, after all, what am I going to talk about? It's not actually easy to come up with something to speak about. Because first of all, it's not a come up with kind of thing. It's not that I have to cook something up. If I sit here and just cook something up, it's going to be an artificial presentation. It's not going to be connected to the audience. I therefore have to perceive what the subject is. And what's really interesting is that there is a subject. It exists separate from me. It's something that is born from our energetic interaction, because we're all connected to this 10 o'clock my time Saturday. My Saturday morning, your Saturday, whenever. We're connected to it. There's a, like you're moving around and you know you're going to end up together at that point. So there's a kind of expectation. There's a kind of desire. And that creates an intention. My job, it's not really a work, it's actually an absence of work, is to simply perceive what the subject is. Now that is an interesting point. It's very much related to first impressions. Now you thought I forgot it, didn't you? It's very much related to first impressions. In fact, it's the exact same mechanism. It's definitely a mechanism. Okay, it's not mechanical, but it's a reproducible state. It's a consciously acquired or accepted capacity. Let's explain. When I, it usually starts on Friday. Although I have feelings, if you can just imagine it. There's like in my far distance field, there's like knocking here, knocking there. And I listen for some time and let it flow because I know it will change anyway. It doesn't, it's not like these things go on for hours. We're talking about moments. Moments of perception. But by Friday, it's becoming very much more intense and clear what that nature of inquiry, what is it that we are concerned with? Because there is a similarity in our energy. Whether you like to admit it or not, or whether you're aware of it or not, we share a certain energy. You might have understood or might have felt that your capacity to relate with others has transformed in these times during our meetings, during our experiences, because you no longer have the capacity to tolerate meaningless things or to be a meaningless person or to have to act on the surface. Your depth has increased enormously because we have all touched and embraced the energy of being. We can no longer tolerate things which are not connected to that. So because of that, our relationships have transformed. Some have fallen away. Some have developed. Some have changed their character and so on. In any case, we have this feeling of contribution, that what we are doing here is something we can contribute to. Now, some of you are aware of this because I get letters after some lectures where somebody tells me, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking about. You addressed exactly my concern. It's different people. It's almost as if you're talking to me. Well, I am. It's not almost as if. You contribute. You are a contributor. You are a creator of what we are doing here. Now, for me to receive this, I have to be, to a large extent, passive. Now, I know that's a little bit difficult to understand, because when we think of passive, we might think of something like a table, which you put things on. But that's not the kind of passive I mean. That passivity is, that's not really passive, because the table is by its nature that. So to become passive is an act that can only take place within something that has the capacity to be active. And I don't even mean like a machine which has on and off, because there has to be consciousness involved. It's a conscious choice to move from action to the passive state. It's only possible in living beings. You see it in animals. I see it in my doggy. He goes out into the backyard at night sometimes. And there's always something out there. It's either the armadillo digging holes, or it's, you don't know what an armadillo is. Anyway, it's a creature that crawls and digs holes. Or it's a fox. Or it's raccoons. We got a pile of them out there. Raccoon, you don't know what a raccoon is? Okay. They are really rascals. They rip things up and they gotta get into everything. Anyway, backyard full of creatures at night. So he goes out there and just freezes. He has one leg up in the air. You can imagine he's standing there on three legs and one leg is up in the air. His tail is totally straight up. His ears are out and he's completely frozen. Probably doesn't even breathe. He's just totally aware of every single creature in that backyard, where it is, what it's doing. Now, it's totally dark. And he's deciding, should I chase it or not? Complete awareness. And it's a passive state. It means you're not doing anything. You know, we talked last week about trying to see, trying to hear. You know, how do you try to see? You're just going to get eyeballs that bug out. How do you try to hear? You see by seeing, you hear by hearing. It's just a passive state of getting rid of all the other distractions. For example, if you just want to hear, you stop momentarily your consciousness being diverted to what this feeling is physically, or what that you see over there, or it's just you and the sound. It's total focus. And in sensory capacity, it means all you are aware of is that particular thing you wish to focus on. You are just accepting, like for example in sound, you're just accepting the sound, nothing else. You may be passive, but you are tuned to accepting the sound. No action, no work, no expenditure of energy. Simply accepting in total peace. No stress. Simply awareness. That's the state of living energy. Awareness. So, I have to be passive while acting, because it's not like, you know, when Friday comes, I cease to exist here. I don't do anything. No, I do. But I have allowed my distant perception to feed me information. I'm saying, what is it that is the subject? I have a wonderful temple room and beautiful deities. So I just stand before them and receive. And what's interesting, at least to me, is that their feeling or their input into the subject echoes the energy that comes, almost as if the topic comes from a place which is far greater than any of us. I find that very interesting. It's almost as if we, when we create this experience that we're doing right now, we are an us, you know, one of us. We are an us, the contributors to this experience. And as an us, our impact on existence is far greater than any of us as individuals. We have an impact on existence as individuals, no doubt. But this us that we become, and perhaps this us that lingers after the broadcast is over, is of a substantially greater influence and power than any individual within this group. We become an us. And in connection with the deity, we bring to us, we draw to us, we attract to us energy that is very connected to something much greater than all of us. Therefore, I call it mystic experience. Sometimes I speak about things which are very related to practicality, because you can't have this experience unless you learn the art of acceptance. And along with the art of acceptance is learning the art of allowance, to allow others to be what they are, to allow life to be what it is. Okay, certainly there will be occasions when influencing that is necessary. We know when those occasions come. But part of acceptance and allowance is to understand what is. So these things that we are allowing and accepting help us perceive what is. And when we perceive what is, we may act appropriately to make a transformation from that spot to something better. This is what I do. I perceive what is today. And from that point, move forward. So why is first impression important? Well, let's examine what a first impression is. Obviously, it's the first perception you have. It's the first feeling that arises in a situation. That's important because it's before you filter out your perceptions. Think about that. We are expert at filtering out perceptions. We are expert at filtering our awareness to push away aspects of awareness because they're either unpleasant, we don't want to know about them, or we think that if we perceive it, it will not be favorable. But a first perception is the unfiltered one. It's a direct connection. When we were not even aware there was a connection, a direct reception of energy, before we understood there's something about it we don't like, or before we understood there's something about it we want, and then our desires and then our lust for it will cause our awareness to warp to fulfill that desire. The first impression is the real one. Okay, before I get more into this, we don't always understand the purport of the first impression. Sometimes I meet somebody, and my first impression of the person is feeling their fear. Just for a second, I feel that they're afraid. Now, if I were to, from that point on, consider this to be the sum total of perception about this person, I would be making a mistake because it's possible the fear I felt is simply that person's lack of confidence in themselves to deal with me, for whatever reason. Maybe I look scary. Maybe I am scary. Maybe I'm challenging them. I don't even know. So what I do is not to filter out that perception, but to store it. First impression comes. It's something unexpected. Because sometimes first impressions are okay. Even when they're okay, in other words, somebody's positive to you. But anyway, that's another subject. I'll get to it. But I put that impression somewhere. and see if the reason for the fear doesn't either dissolve with appropriate interaction, or it becomes obvious that it is not relevant, not relevant to the interaction. Now, having said that, which means that even though it's correct, it's not necessarily the best way to perceive the situation. Sometimes that first impression is the most valuable one. Knowing the difference between when the first impression is the most valuable one and when the first impression is colored by another person's fear or anxiety or whatever is a very important capacity. And the only way to develop that capacity is to remember the first impression. Always remember it. I don't mean it every single moment. I mean have it concretely in the memory banks. And then to continue to examine and refer it to the first impression, because that will help us build the capacity to understand the differences in that which we perceive. Now, I've seen in my own life that my first perception is a very powerful thing. Usually, and it's very difficult for me to say this in public, but usually my first impression is an image of the person, and it's usually correct. We meet, I get an energetic snapshot of the whole person before they're able to filter their first impression or react to me. So it's like a boom, snapshot. And you read it instantly. And instantly you understand. That's basically how I perceive it. But then what do? I question it. I edit it. This is not good. I do it because I lack self-confidence. Okay, I've said it. I admit it. What a horrible thing to say in public. A fault. Oh my God. How can I face you again? I'm filled with these things. But anyway, lack of self-confidence. Oh, maybe I was wrong. Let me investigate. And usually what happens is, while I'm investigating, the other person is doing a dance to impress me with something or have me think a certain way about them, which is what we all do. We all wish to present ourselves in the best light, to show to others that we are a good person, to prove to others that we are good enough, so that we will prove to ourselves that we are good enough, so that we can feel good about ourselves. So we put the power of approval of self in the hands of others whose approval we thirst for. We are trying to prove ourselves to this courtroom of life. We're trying to prove ourselves to the judge and the jury so that they will stand up and applaud us and say, you are good enough. Like at the end of all these movies where the hero gets applauded at the end. After a long struggle against impossible odds, the hero is recognized and applauded by everyone who says, bravo, bravo. And then the movie ends with music playing. As if the day after the applause doesn't count. The entire life after that doesn't count because he has been approved. And the whole rest of the life basks in the approval. It's just our nature. It's what we wish. So we dance around each other in this way, seeking approval and ignoring what we are and what others are. Because that's not the major concern when we're simply eager to get others' approval. Because the major concern is the approval. It doesn't really matter how we feel as long as they feel about us in a certain way. And it doesn't matter how they are or who they are as long as they approve us, because that's their function in life. Their function in life is to approve us. And thus, we are the supreme selfish persons. Self-centered. All that counts is the universe shall approve us. Now, that's a problem from so many points of view, and you see it instantly. Because it takes blinding ourselves to what we really are. Because we have assumed we are bad. And because we are bad, we don't want to know what we are. So we don't want to feel who we are. We assume we're bad, so we deny what we are. It's the reason. Because a bad person, why would they want to look in the mirror and see a bad person? Why would they want to deeply get absorbed in that bad person? They want other things. And if they can't perceive what they are, there's no chance of them perceiving others. And therefore, they are unaware and incapable of having first impressions that are meaningful. Now, to actually have a meaningful first impression, you require awareness. And you require faith in yourself. That means, I perceived this. I believe that perception. You don't have to believe in the perception. You trust the perception. You accept that this is what you perceived. Whether it's true or not is not an issue. To actually have a meaningful first impression, you have to accept that this is what you perceived. Because this has nothing to do with rationality. We are not talking about rational analysis and rational things here. What we're talking about is that a perception was received and we accept it. We don't edit it. As soon as you edit perception, you are creating illusion. Because when you edit perception, you are changing what it is into something it is not. That is illusion. What is not. So, when you accept what is, you just accept the perception. To really be aware, one has to have simultaneously the capacity to passively accept while actively responding. There's a category in electronics. It's a passive device versus an active device. That's a bad example because they both modify things in a certain way. Otherwise, why have a device? Okay, let's try another example here. Anyway, you get the point. Passive means you don't edit. You don't edit and don't try to make something to be something else. Just accept what it is. And continue that at every moment. Isn't that interesting? Because awareness is a continual acceptance passively of perception. Continual. Even if we were to place ourselves in this situation of continual passive acceptance, we would revolt. We would feel, oh, I'm chained. And then we would relax. Because we would then accept awareness is a continuous experience that we allow to take place. We allow it to take place by not editing it. What are the means by which we edit experience? Well, the eyes don't edit. The process of vision doesn't edit. Okay, sure, you can say, I don't want to look at that. I'm going to look at that. But the actual vehicle or powerhouse or that which creates the editing process is the mind. The mind says, I like that, give me more. I don't like that, I don't want it. Or this is boring or whatever. And so the mind edits experiences. What does the mind do when we're bored? Great example. It becomes the master editor. When we're bored, what does the mind do? It goes somewhere else. It goes to another place. It forgets entirely what's happening. It gets lost in thought. It creates pictures and images. It remembers. It fantasizes. It edits out reality entirely because we're so bored. Awareness is not a function of the mind. The mind has no place in awareness. Awareness is an allowance of it to be what it is. Why would we be bored? What creates boredom? I have nothing to do. Life is a doing. And because I have nothing to do, I'm bored. I have nothing to do that inspires me. Yet, whatever experience you're having, the awareness is the same. It's an allowance of existence. Ultimately, is there a difference between this color or that color when perceiving color. This color is that. This color is this. This is blue. This is yellow. Yet, depending on how I feel, like in the morning I open my drawers where I have my shirts, and I look at yellow and I say, nah, I don't like yellow. Or I look at red and I go, oof. Or I look at blue and I go, no. I look at white and I go, oh, how boring. And I look at green and I always go, yeah, I like green. If it was up to me, I'd wear green all the time because I like green. I'm a green guy. Color in and of itself is equal. Yet my mood is affected by color. Sound in and of itself is equal. After all, it boils down to notes in rhythm and tonality. Yet some notes, some music makes me feel good, some makes me feel bad. So even though my awareness is allowance, how I feel about what I have allowed to be perceived is not passive. The act of perception is, if it is done in full awareness, it's to allow awareness to come. You accept it. But how you feel about what you have perceived is unique to you. And it is not passive, it's active. And that's the difference between ultimate personalism and a kind of non-living impersonalism. To simply see everything as the same. You can. A note is a note. A wave is a wave. A feeling is a feeling. If you detach how you feel from your perception, you are at that stage of detachment where there's no longer any impact from the external world. One is insulated. One who is connected to self feels and allows themselves to feel and accepts yellow, blue, green, red, whatever, and then feels the color. I go that way. Feels the sound. I go that way. Feels the environment, the place of living, and goes with that which resonates within because they allow it to come. They allow themselves to feel. They allow themselves to react when it's appropriate. They are in touch with themselves. Of course, that's an absurd expression because we are ourselves. We feel, we perceive, we are. And we accept and allow perception. We accept and allow perception. And then we respond according to our desire. Sometimes we say, okay, I remember it. No need to react. Sometimes we say, I must react now to this. Sometimes we say, I shall never react to this. Or whatever. This is the environment within which the mystical process takes place. And the only reason there may be a disconnection so that we don't feel the mystical process is because we have edited our perception. We are taking awareness and editing it and turning it into something it isn't and creating illusion. Ultimately, self-realization is such a lousy term. It is a horrible phrase. It is so contradictory. It's an oxymoron, if you think about it. Self-realization, realizing the self. How in heaven's name can you realize the self? The self is. You don't realize it. It's an absurd term. Being. You can't even say being the self. That's also an impossible term. You can't be the self. You are the self. So you can only use terms like you are, I am, being. Not even I am being, just I am, period. New paragraph. Being. It's a cool difference between I am, period, new paragraph, and being, period, new paragraph. I am is a statement of my existence. I am. I stand here. I express. I have this energy. I am this energy. I expand. I perceive. I interact. I am. Very much the consciousness is me, because I am. And then there's being, simply being, which includes everything within being. Isn't that cool? I think it's cool. I really think that's cool, this distinction. I am and being. I should do a meditation called being. In fact, the whole meditation would be, you sit down and I say one word, be. And we sit there, wrapped in being. Actually, you can't be wrapped in being. Oh, it's so cool. You can't be wrapped in being because that implies being is something separate from you that wraps you. You just are. So be. This mystical experience and first impressions, intimately related. That moment before you edit reality. Have you noticed that when we do these meditations that end up in us simply being, one thing that is very powerfully missing from the meditation is editing. We don't edit anything. We just are. We don't edit. Perception flows. We allow it to. We accept it. And when we wish to connect with the divine, then our consciousness of being reaches out, calling the divine beings, calling Radha and Krishna, calling them, and having their energy flow through us. And we accept it, and we allow it, and we feel it. It floods us and everywhere, and we float within that divine energy. And within that, there's so much that takes place and so much information and so much love and such a continuous capacity to perceive. It's the mystical experience here and now. Is that mystical experience any different than the mystical experience you assume you will get in the quote-unquote spiritual world? Do you think it is attained by dying and getting another body? That you go somewhere else? You can use words like attainment. You can use words like returning to. You can use words like living with. They don't contradict the mystic experience of pure connection to the divine. Except that you haven't gone anywhere. And you haven't died. It is the purest mystic experience. You can go anywhere you like, with anyone you like, all according to your desire, but only when you allow. You allow being without editing. Like, when you feel Radha and Krishna's energy floating over you, how do you respond to it? Do you edit it? Do you say, oh, but I can't do that. Therefore, it's not happening. It's my imagination. Because I have no faith in myself. I have no confidence in myself. Because I don't have that capacity. Because I am bad and not good enough. And yet, strangely, for some reason, if I can manage to hypnotize you in such a way that you forget for a moment that you're not bad, that you are good enough. You feel it. Up to the point you say, I can't do this. It's fascinating. It's fascinating how we willingly go out of our way, do a lot of work to create, to maintain, and restore illusion. It's our creation. In fact, we go out of our way to give Maya outrageous power, to empower Maya as that incredible power equal to God, and to feel so badly that we can never get out of it. Not until we get some mercy and die. And we can just imagine God looking down on us and saying, interesting. This person thinks they need my mercy for them to let go of their own desire to create illusion. Okay, I'll just help them by giving them more illusion. I'll give them more opportunity to create it. Until they get to the point of realizing there's no point in doing it. When they finally sit back and be, and allow. Allow me. Invite me. It's an invitation. You sit. You relax. You let go. You feel. And you invite Radha and Krishna. And they embrace you. There's no work. What's wonderful is when this happens, is to watch how you reject it. To watch it. To watch what you do to reject it. To even sometimes, in certain cases, to say that Radha and Krishna don't want to associate with me. I'm too sinful. And by that declaration, push them away. Just to observe this. It's a phenomenal experience. We have a very hard time to allow ourselves to feel. Therefore, a kind of inorganic impersonalism is a great excuse for people who don't want to feel to justify that, to rationalize it with a philosophy. It's a facility. To not feel requires no courage. It actually is motivated by fear. To feel requires enormous courage and freedom from fear. A spiritual warrior is not one who fights. It's one who stops fighting because they realize they've already won. The battle is over. Do you think warriors fight all the time? Eventually, the battle's over. They stop fighting. They let go. Question. One of the deeper fears is to lose our individuality. Somehow it seems to us that even our limiting beliefs and filters about ourselves form our personality and individuality. So we are afraid to become nothing or to become something indefinite if we let go of them. The question is our true spiritual individuality always there? Or is it something we still have to develop in contact with spiritual energy? Great question. That is really a great question. Now, how am I going to answer that quickly? Because, I mean, that brings into it the entirety of all the various philosophies, spiritual philosophies, Eastern philosophies especially, which have been dealing with this dichotomy of personal, impersonal, in so many ways. I'm going to answer this question from the point of view of what we have been discussing. Now, how can you lose your individuality? Losing your individuality means to lose selfhood, to stop being. Now, that would make sense if we were to separate Remember we had in the lecture this I am period paragraph, being period paragraph, these two, let's take them out of the paragraph and put them here on a 180 degree line. You got being and you got I am. They are not opposed, but if we were to separate this I am from being, if we were to take away I am and simply consider being, I can imagine one could develop a fear of loss of selfhood. After all, being is a vastness. We even sometimes say, although I can't remember where, the vastness of being, the vastness of eternity, the vastness of existence. So if one's consciousness is absorbed in being, initially that feeling could be there that one gets lost. Now, how do you get lost? Well, in reality, since entering into the being is your conscious choice, and you are allowing it, if you remember, in this lecture, I use the word allow a lot of times. You are allowing it. You chose to allow being. You chose to perceive and be aware of being. It's your choice. You allowed it. If I allow something to take place, I can also at one point not allow it. Now, fear would be there, like, for example, if there's a huge pit of molten iron in a steel factory and I throw myself in it, I would be instantly vaporized. So if I allow myself to throw myself in this pit, that's it. That's a one-time choice. You can't go backwards. You can't undo that. Because body dies. Death. Finished. Instantly. Zap. Like that. I would be afraid of that. I would, you know, I'd be really afraid. The difference between that act, which makes me afraid, and the act of being is that I cannot die. I am ever existing. So if I allow being to be what it is, I'm always there. I can decide to not allow. Being is not an act of stuff that will come and take me over and put me somewhere else. It's not like there are demons in being that will manifest and capture me and stuff me into a can. Anyway, even if they did stuff me into a can, I would be stuffed in the can. So neither of these fears are valid in this case. Then comes the fear of dissolution. Dissolution. That I'm so absorbed with being that I dissolve, my consciousness dissolves. I have no idea how that might happen. I can't even speak about it. But okay, let's say it could happen. Well, let's assume that you think it can happen. I don't think it can happen. I mean, personally, I've never had such an experience. I never even came close to having such an experience. I can't even imagine what the experience would be like. Because after all, consciousness is something that is emanating from me. It's my essence. Even if my essence is expanding outwards, it's not like it gets lost. It's still my essence, and it still has a source. Me. So I can't even conceive of what it means, dissolution. Unless, of course, you've got the being rays that come and shoot you like laser beams of being that, and you just split off into little atoms of being everywhere, or not even that, electrons of being, or not even that, just whatever of being split off everywhere. I don't think so. It's like some crazy bad dream. No relationship to existence. But let's assume that I'm afraid of this. Let's address the fear. Why am I afraid? What is this fear? To lose my individuality. What does it mean, individuality? You can only have that fear if you have no experience of what I am is. I am. How can you lose it? Can someone take it? Well, it's not takeable. It just is. Can it somehow be separated from me? Well, then what is the me? If the me and the I am can be separated, the what I think the I am is not I am. It's I am with something. I am also something. I am covered by something. It's not possible to lose the I am from the me, because the me and the I am are the same thing. It's not possible because there's no separateness to lose, as in divide. And if I'm being, if I'm essence, is there a mechanism in essence? Is there a mechanism in essence that can dissolve essence? What is dissolved essence? Essence is axiomatic. It is the basis. It is the fundamental principle, beyond which there's nothing further. You can't break it down. It just is. It's pure energy. Never created, never destroyed, always existent. So how can essence dissolve essence? Can't happen. And you can't have any demons anywhere with their essence guns to shoot essence, because essence is beyond the world of doing, no matter how subtle it is. Again, dissolution, as in you go to sleep and you dream and you float away, but you always wake up. Or you take some drugs and you float away into another reality. but you always come out of it. Even if you die, you again assemble, using even the worst terminology, on the other side and enter into another form somewhere else. No one can conceive of the mechanism by which I am emanates so far away from the source. Or here's an even better way to look at it. I am runs out of emanation. Catch this point. This is a really good one. I am depletes. So emanation just depletes. At one point, it has nothing more to give. And the last particles go out. And there's nothing left. There's no more power. If so, then what had the power for the last powerful? How did the last particle leave? Let's even accept that for a second. And there is some core of energy which emanates. So it has some transmission power. So if it's a particle, if these are a bunch of particles that just float away and dissolve, what caused the last one to leave? Where did it get the power? Or was the last one the source of the power by which all of them left? And then the last one says, I'm the last one here, damn it. I'm out of here. And it also goes. And then you're left with nothing. That's a good one. Now, none of it makes sense unless you simply put aside all conceptualization and you simply say it happens. No logic, no reason, no reality to it. You simply say it happens and somebody says, yes, I believe it. Pure faith. No one has any experience of that happening. Because if they did have the experience, they wouldn't exist anymore. If they didn't exist anymore, then the whole concept of eternal ceases to have value. And since that whole philosophy rests on the concept of eternal, it contradicts. We're getting very mental here because this question is very mental. The fear is something we bring with us from our experience in this realm. The experience of sudden death carried over from previous lifetimes. The possibility of destruction or devastation. Fear. Or, how about this? We are thinking ourselves as so bad and not good enough that deep down we really want to lose our individuality because we feel this will be an escape from this badness, from this negativity. So we think that when we lose that individuality, we lose all the badness of it. This fear itself is really the key to understanding this question. Because it's these fears which are our limiting beliefs and filters. They make us this illusion. These filters, these beliefs, these blocks define us. Because we are afraid because we are thinking ourselves bad and not good enough. So we are afraid. And so all these other beliefs and filters and blocks are creations of us to somehow deal with it. Of course, they don't deal with it at all. They screw us up royally, but that we have to find out. It's part of the process. It's part of life. You have to go through it and come to your own conclusion that you're good enough. You are. I am. I am is devoid of good and bad. I simply am. There are no adjectives involved. I am good. I am bad. I am fat. I am skinny. None of these modifiers. They're modifying that verb. What I am. Maybe they're not. They're modifiers in sense of they are trying to define that amness. None of these have anything to do with I am. That's why the concept of I am transcends. And when you just feel that, when you just are, within being, you perceive and are aware of being in its vastness, and you are the center of your awareness. And even if your awareness flows out, so you perceive far distant realms, you are the source of the perception. It is the nature of what I am. It is an experience. And I am is an identity. I don't even have to call it a spiritual identity. It is my identity. Did that answer the question? Okay. Yeah. That was quite a mouthful. Here's a question about silence. And not, the question is not about silence. The question is about spiritual attainment, spiritual perfection. This question is related that the connection to the divine is very much related to the silence within. Yes, absolutely. This concept of silence is the concept of passivity or the concept of allowance, awareness. Because when we speak about being silent within, we mean not speaking or not moving or not doing. We just accept and allow, just quietly. Means no creation, no doing, no action, simply being. It is silence. There are sounds within the silence. There are communications within silence, because when you are so silent, you are allowing and accepting perception to flow within that silence. It's just like if you want to talk to somebody, but there's so much noise everywhere, you can't hear them. Or what we usually do, we talk at the same time, energetically. So we're so busy talking, we can't hear. So the real solution is silence, to allow perception to come. The mind is a noise when it is not engaged as a servant of awareness. When mind dictates awareness, it is an obstacle. When mind is the servant of awareness, it is a friend. It is a tool. So this silence is the way to allow it to take place. Let me know if that helped. Okay. Another question. I got to read it. The gist of this question is that the first perception we have, the first impression, is of the moment. But the question says that the following perceptions take into account the previous ones. For example, in this discussion, I say words. So the sentence that just appeared depends on the previous sentence, which depends on the previous sentence, or depends on a sentence that happened 20 minutes ago. So we build on previous perception. So we're building on previous perception, and the question says the reason perhaps our perception in the present moment has become colored is because of its dependency on the previous moments. That's a very good question, because that question takes into consideration the relationship between awareness and action, doing and being. It's that dance between being and doing. And specifically, how does one let go of these previous experiences and perceptions, specifically if they were negative ones that color our present perception? In other words, we become conditioned to think in a certain way, much like we know that putting our hand in fire will burn us because we have that experience. That's a very cool question. But when I suggest that our awareness allow this expression, allow this perception, and thus an understanding of what is, I mean that to be the mechanism by which you choose how to respond. So that methodology accepts the present, which is a composite of so many factors. So the response you make is not just to what happened in the last split millisecond. It's the response you make to the package of experience which created this continuous event that you have to respond to. So it's a way to have a continuously clear consciousness to properly respond. It doesn't just wipe away the past. This is not a method to wipe out the past. It's not that you can go rob a bank and then a week later sit in meditation and be aware and perceive I am, and the police will somehow or another lose your record and not arrest you. It doesn't work like that. Or that you can sit in this kind of meditational state and be aware and be in the present and experience and allow, and a trauma which has rooted itself in your heart shall dissolve. But it does work to perceive that trauma and deal with it. to accept that it happened, to accept your pain, to accept your responsibility, to own that act and event, and accept the responsibility, and to respond appropriately, perhaps by fixing what you did wrong, or letting go the trauma, or whatever. So the present is a wonderful opportunity to do anything, to do everything. But don't use it as an excuse to think you can just dissolve everything by being in the present and having some feeling, and then it all floats away. If our experience is colored by a negativity from the past, then our perception should allow that to be what it is, so that we can deal with it appropriately, so that we can accept it and act appropriately. It becomes part of the tools of consciousness to create responses. I hope that addressed the question.